Thank you all very much for coming. Welcome back to another episode in our series, Tefillah, the Past, the Practical, and the Profound, where we talk about the halacha, the history, the meaning of tefillah. I unfortunately was late today. Unfortunately, I have some unfortunate news to share, which is that a family member was unfortunately killed in Gaza during the fighting. And so I've just been running around trying to deal with that and be there for family members. And that's mainly the reason that I was late today. So his name was Zachariah Pesach ben Miriam. Our learning should be for an aliyah for his neshama.
Yes.
And No. Different side of the family.
I mean, not that it's
different side of the family. No, not Miri. His neshama should have an aliyah. And we'll get right to it. Today's going to be a quicker shiur because for the same reasons. I have to run out on the back end also, unfortunately.
From your side?
Yes, on my side. Thank you. Thank you very much. He was a first cousin of mine. Okay. So last time we spoke about the meaning of tefillah. Specifically not the meaning of the concept of tefillah, but about the meaning of the word tefillah. What does it mean when we say we are mitpalel, when we say that we're what we call in Yiddish davening? Last week we looked at one approach. Last week we looked at one possible understanding of the idea, the meaning of the word tefillah. We're not going to rehash that out right now. The shiur is online if you want to listen to it. But today we'll do another one. We'll look at another understanding of the word tefillah. Email me and I'll send you a link. There's a website that all the shiurim are uploaded to. It's once you have the link, you can use it whenever you want, but I'll send you the link.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. So we have a little bit of a hard stop given the circumstances today, but let's try and get through as much as we can. Now, in order to start talking about this, we really have to ask the same question as last time, which is, what does it mean to pray? When we talk about tefillah in English, we usually use the word pray. But as we spoke about last time, that's not really an appropriate translation. The dictionary definition of the word pray is from the Latin word precarius, which C-A-R-I-U-S, which is to acquire or obtain by asking. And prayer is not, I mean, certainly part of prayer is asking for things, but tefillah is not just about asking for things. Tefillah is about much more than that. Okay, but what is it about? What does it mean? So that's what we'll talk about today. Last week we explored one answer to this question, that tefillah is about sort of reflecting in your own head about what we want and whether we want what we're supposed to want. And we spoke about how that's reflected in the word pelilah as it appears in Sefer Bereshit. But this week we'll do another answer, and it also starts with a passage in Bereshit. And it goes as follows. The Torah tells us in Bereshit Paraglamin Psukim Aleph through Ches, that Rachel and Leah are competing for children. Rachel and Leah are competing for children, and in order to facilitate children, Rachel's not having very much luck, and so the Torah tells us that she gives Yaakov her handmaid Bilhah, and the idea is that by her handmaid having a child, it will be part of her dynasty, and she will have kids sort of by proxy in that fashion. And sure enough, Bilhah conceives and has a child. First child she has is, anybody know his name? Who it was? Dan. Dan is Bilhah's first child. And then the Torah tells us, Vatar od, that Bilhah conceived again. Vatele Bilhah Shifchat Rachel ben Sheinil Yaakov, and had another son. Tomar Rachel Naftule Elokim Naftalti. Now, based on this, you can probably intuit which one this one's name is going to be. Naftule Elokim Naftalti Im Achotai Gam Yachoti Vatikra Shemo Naftali, and she named him Naftali. But this is the understanding that Naftali is from the words Naftule Elokim Naftalti is clear. That's a clear. It's a clear preservation of the Shoresh. But what's not clear is what that actually means. What does it mean, Naftule Elokim Naftalti? That Rachel said, Bilhah gives birth to a second son. Rachel says, Naftule Elokim Naftalti, Imachotai with my sister. His name is Naftali. What does that mean? What does it mean? What is Naftule? It's a strange word. But yet it appears in our Parsha, in our Torah, in our portion that we're dealing with here. What does it mean? So if you look in Rashi, Rashi quotes two opinions. The first opinion he quotes is that of a certain Rabbi Menachem ben Saruk. Nachum ben Saruk was a Spanish Jewish philologist from the 10th century, so an early rabbi, and he actually writes something very interesting. In source number 2, Menachem ben Saruk Persho b'machberet tzamid patil, chiburim but is naftula elokim naftalti mean chiburim et hamakom nitchabarti im achotai lezakos levanim. It means naftule comes from the word tzamid patil, like a seal or something that connects two things together, and it means chiburim, bonds, connections. So Naftali, according to Menachem ben Saruk, Rashi quotes Menachem ben Saruk, means a sort of a connection or a binding or a bond of some sort. And chiburim itamakom nitchabarti imachotai. So what does it mean that Rachel was naftule Elokim naftalti? It means that God sort of bound her to her sister. Leah had two boys, and now Bilhah, Rachel through Bilhah, had two boys, and now God had kind of leveled the playing field. He had made them, he had removed the differences that were between them, and that way sort of equating them and bringing them closer to each other in stature and in standing. What? To equalize, essentially, exactly. But the word Naftali comes from the word patil, and tamil, a patil is a seal. It's something that binds one thing tightly to another thing. And therefore, Naftali means that Rachel is saying, I have been bound tightly to Leah, in the sense that she's no longer behind her. They're now together as equals in the race for children. God has joined them together, meaning He's eliminated the differences between them, and in that way they're connected now. They're still sort of at odds with each other. They're fighting here, but they're connected in the sense of their stature, meaning they both are now on a level playing field. And ultimately, I think we see from Rashi's discussion of Naftali that the word Naftali, pei tav lamed petel, means to bind, petil, or to connect in such a way that the distinction between two things gets eliminated. I'll say that again. Petil, pei tav lamed, the shoresh of Naftali, means to bind or connect in such a way that the distinction between two things is eliminated. And so too it's used in the context of Rachel and Leah. But Rachel and Leah had the distinction between them eliminated. They were one. I mean, again, they were fighting, but they were one in terms of their standing. And so therefore, that is what Petil Naftali means. Now, how does that help us? How does that help us? The truth is, this just refers to the word petel or petil, pe tav lamed. But that's similar to tefillah, but it's not exactly the same as tefillah. Tefillah is tav pe lamed. So we haven't gotten to tefillah yet. We're not there yet. Right now we're just at petil. We'll see how it comes together. But for right now, we just need to understand that petil means to bind or to connect, such that the boundary between two things is eliminated. Okay. That makes sense? Okay. So let's put that aside for one moment, and we'll learn together a Mishnah in Kehilim. The Mishnah discusses the laws of Tumah and Tahara, the laws of purity and impurity. A vessel, a kli, a jug, whatever it is subject to purity and impurity. If something tameh touches a vessel, the vessel becomes impure. That's how the laws of Tumah and Tahara work. So the question our Mishnah deals with, and it's an obscure Mishnah, it's the fifth Mishnah in the third parak of Maseches Kehilim, not a tractate of Mishnayos that many people venture into. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehi B'dvaro.
Amen.
But that's what our Mishnah is dealing with, or about to look at, is the coating on a vessel. Let's say you have a vessel that you coat with an additional layer of clay. You have a vessel that you coat with an additional layer of clay to reinforce it. You want to protect the outside of it, so you take your... This is far-fetched from us in the modern day, but you can understand why this was important back once upon a time. If someone had a jug and they needed to strengthen the jug, they wanted to protect it, so they'd reinforce it with another layer of clay. That's what they would do. And let's say the vessel then becomes impure. Does the clay covering also become impure? Is it part of the vessel? Or is it not part of the vessel? And therefore, once it touches the kli, the vessel, it'll only affect the vessel. It's not necessarily going to affect the covering. Okay, there's a lot more to talk about here, some nuances, but that's basically the discussion. Now, the Mishnah tells us as follows. In source number 3, Hatofel klicheres habari. If you coat a sound vessel, meaning if you have a vessel that doesn't have any cracks, it's just a full vessel, it's not in need of repair, it's a perfectly fine jug. You coat it. So then Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, Metamim, they say that the coating contracts impurity, meaning if the vessel were to become impure, the coating will also become impure. V'chacham Omrim, Hatofel latabari ta. If the coating is coating a vessel, let's say you took the clay and you coated a perfectly fine vessel. The jug didn't have any cracks, didn't have any holes, just was fine. So then it's not considered to be integral to the vessel because indeed the vessel can function without it. It's a perfectly fine vessel and it's going to be tahor, it's going to be pure, even if the kli becomes tamei. However, v'eta ra'ua tamei. But if you use the coating to line a coat, a cracked vessel, so then it becomes tamei if the vessel becomes tamei. And the logic here makes sense. If you want, if the coating is really needed to hold the vessel together, to patch together the cracks and cover up the holes, well then it's an integral part of the vessel because without it the vessel wouldn't function. And so the Chachamim say no. Once the vessel becomes impure, the coating, assuming that it actually provides more than just a protective purpose on the vessel, is actually going to become impure also. And so therefore, according to the Chachamim, if the coating is there to help seal up the gaps in a cracked jug or a jug with holes, a holy jug, and a jug with holes, then the vessel becomes impure. The coating will also become impure. That's what we're talking about here. That is our Mishnah. Does the Mishnah make sense? Yeah, okay. Well, the question then becomes, why are we learning this Mishnah? Right? And I apologize that we're going very quickly through the sources. It's just the circumstances demand that of us today. But why are we learning this Mishnah? Why are we learning this Mishnah? Has the word Hatofel. Very interesting, because of the wording. And we'll see because of the idea also. The Mishnah teaches us that a coating, depending on the status, depending on the togetherness of the jug, and depending on the shita, a coating may or may not take on the same status as the vessel it protects for the sake of tuma and tahara. But what functionally, what does a coating do? If you see, you're going to Home Depot to buy a can of coating. What would the coating? What does the coating do? Yeah, it's used to seal something up. It seals something off from something else. Oftentimes something from the air that you don't want to come into your home or something like that. You'd buy some sealant. You'd buy a coating. And at times, as in the example of the sages in our Mishnah, the coating is used to connect broken shards of a vessel together or to patch up cracks in a broken vessel. And what word is used? You pointed it out. To connect things? To bind them together? Hatofel. Hatofel is the verb. Tefillah, with a tet, is another conjugation of that verb. And so we see from here that, again, we have the same thing. Tefillah means to connect or to bind things together. And I know what some of you may be thinking. What's the problem here? Yeah, tefillah in the prayer sense, if you open up a siddur tefillah, or in the naftali sense, is using a tav at the very end of the alphabet. But this is using a tet. Hatofel is with a tet, so we're going to address that. But right now, let's assume that these are the same word. We see that both in the Torah, in the Rishonim, and in the Mishnah, that it often refers to connecting or binding two things together. That much is clear, right? Okay. So now we're really ready to really bind and connect all of the things that we've learned together, pardon the pun. Because writing in the 1700s, the founder of Chabad, Rabbi Schneur Zalman of Liadi, writes in his commentary on the Torah, he wrote a commentary on the Torah called Torah Or. In that commentary on the Torah, at the beginning of Parshas Truma, he writes something profound. He's the one who makes this point, by the way. It's not me. He points this out. That Naphtali and Tofel, they both mean to connect, to bind together. So, and he, let's look in source number 4 in Torah Or, he writes the end of the first line, ulachein tefillah hu lashon chibur. Tefillah comes from the language of chibur, of connection. Kimo naftule naftalti, as is the case with Naftali, where tfit, where the same very similar shoresh means to connect, to bind together. Uvalashon haMishnah, and he says also in the Mishnah, hatofel kli cheres, someone who binds together a kli cheres, an earthenware vessel, meaning coating in the sense that you're keeping together these shards of jug that are otherwise at risk of falling apart. If you look in the way that he quotes the Mishnah, though, he has it there with a tav, right? Our Mishnah had hatofel with a tet. He has our Mishnah in the second line, hatofel with a tav. So he seems to have had a different version of the Mishnah, although that's not necessarily true, as we'll see. But in any case, and so therefore, the same thing applies, tefillah, when it comes to our service of God, tefillah is the thing that connects us to our root, meaning to our Creator, effectively, the thing that connects us to God. And so what emerges from the Torah, or this is really another understanding in our journey to understand what tefillah means. Tefillah means, comes from the word hatofel, or naftali, and it means to connect. Tefillah means to connect. So when we do tefillah is we connect to God. That's what we do. Tefillah helps us connect to God. It helps us cling to God, to bind to God, but in a deep way. And, you know, the last time we spoke, we thought that tefillah came from the word plila, which is the reflexive conjugation of plila, which is to think or to reflect. This is another approach. Tefillah comes from the shoresh pei tav lamed, petel, or tav pei lamed. Seemingly the pei and the tav here are interchangeable. I'm not sure why, but that's what he's basing his understanding on. And that's what it means. That's what tefillah means, according to the Baal HaTanya. He wrote the Tanya also. Tefillah means to connect. That, what do we have to do now? We have to address the problem. The major problem here is that if you go back to the Mishnah, tefillah is spelled with a tet. It's not spelled with a tav. Tefillah is supposed to be spelled with a tav, at least the way we talk about tefillah. Remember, a tav is the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet. A tet is the ninth letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So, very nice drasha. Tofel means to connect together, and therefore tefillah is a process of connecting ourselves to something greater, connecting to God. But again, that only works if the letters are the same. Here, they make the same sound, but the letters are different. The letters are not the same. So, long story short, the Tikkuni Zohar talks about this, and some of the Rebbes of the Lubavitcher Hasidic dynasty have dealt with it in their writings. But a very nice summary of their idea appears in the Sefer Tefillah La'ani. Tefillah La'ani is a sefer on tefillah where he summarizes some of the discussion about this idea. And he answers the question, how could the Torah or Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi quote the Mishnah as using the language tefillah if the Mishnah spelling is not correct? It's not accurate. It's not the same. And he says that in order to understand it, we need to understand what the shoresh with the tet actually means. Tet pei lamed. What does that mean? Maybe someone who's learned Hilchos Brachos might know the answer to this. What is tet pei lamed? Tafel, tofel, tefel. In Hebrew, it's also a modern Hebrew term.
Subsidiary,
secondary, exactly. It means secondary too. Tefel, tofel, means secondary with a tet. So the Tefillah La'ani writes, and we'll talk about it outside just for the sake of time, but you can read it on the top of page number 2 inside if you want to. He writes that the truth is the tefillah with a tet and the tefillah with a tav are interconnected. They're interconnected. They both refer to tefillah, but they refer to two different levels of tefillah. So there's one level of tefillah, which is the level we know today, which is what we call tefillah with a tav. That's when we talk about tefillah, that's what we do. But there's another level of tefillah, which actually spells tefillah with a tet. With a tet. And so he writes that by engaging in the first level of tefillah, what we would now call regular tefillah, Shemona Esrei, etc., davening to God, we merit to reach the next level of tefillah with a tet. So if tefillah with a tav means to connect, and tefel, tefillah with a tet, means to become secondary. So then he writes, and this is really beautiful, that by engaging in tefillah with a tav, by connecting with God, we merit to merge with God. We become a part of God, absorbed by Him, that we reach the second level where we become secondary to God. In other words, before we engage in tefillah, there's God and there's us. Through the process of tefillah, through the connecting with God, we merit tefillah. We merit the actual becoming nullified next to God. We become secondary to God. In other words, tefillah is not just the process of connecting with God, but in its most pure form, tefillah is the process of merging with God. During tefillah, we connect with God and bring us so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we actually become part of the same organism. That's a deep Hasidic idea, and it's a little bit esoteric, but that's what he writes. And therefore, even though the Mishnah speaks of tefillah with a tet, and the spelling is not the same, there's really no contradiction, because tefillah with a tet is just the second level. It's the outcome of tefillah with a tav. Okay, in other words, just to summarize, because again, we're on short timing today, and this is a complicated idea, by doing tefillah, by davening, we connect to God and we merit tefillah. We merit to become absorbed by God. We merit to become subsidiary to God. The deepest form of connection that there is. So therefore we see from here, my friends, another meaning of tefillah. Tefillah means to connect with God. And the goal of tefillah is that by connecting with God, we will remove some of the space that separates us from God and ultimately join together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think that's a beautiful image. And I'll close here right now. But not only that, in closing, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the son of Rav Shalom Shachna Schneerson, the great-grandson of Rabbi Schneur Zalman of Liadi, who put forth this idea, his great-grandson, put forth a beautiful understanding. It's also summarized in the Sefer Tefillah Liani. Comes from his Rishimos. And he said that, first of all, we need to look at the line, Un Unasana Tokef. Un Unasana Tokef, what's Unasana Tokef? When do we say Unasana Tokef? Yom Kippur, yeah, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's a prayer written by Rabbi Amnon of Mainz as he was taken out to be, his limbs were hacked off. It's a terrible story. Rabbi Amnon of Mainz in Unasana Tokef calls the human Mashul Kecheres Hanishbar. He says the human is, a person is like a broken earthenware vessel. So writes the Tefillah of the Ani something beautiful. And with this we'll close. Tefillah is the act of coating an earthenware vessel, as it is in the Mishnah. For as Rav Amnon of Mainz taught, people, we are all broken vessels. We're all broken vessels. All of us approach God broken inside about something, pained by something, struggling with something, wanting something more. And tefillah is a process that connects the broken parts of us into a whole. By engaging in tefillah and connecting with God, our own cracks are filled in. Our own insecurities, our own suffering, our own pain is relieved. It's ameliorated, turning us into a vessel capable of receiving the Shechinah, into a full, complete vessel. In other words, and just to summarize what we've done today and bring it all together, because I acknowledge that this is deep and it probably requires more time than we have. We see from Rachel's description of Naphtali, and also from the Mishnah, that tefillah is the process of connecting to God, right? That much was clear. Tefillah is about connecting with God. And by the way, this answer of tefillah is connecting with God is a beautiful answer, because I think it reflects the pshat of what we would think tefillah means. Any answer we use for tefillah is deficient. If we say tefillah means to ask for things, when we talk to God, then just to say thank you. Is that not tefillah if you define tefillah as asking for things? No. But if you define tefillah as connecting, then any time that you're engaged in a relation, in a dialogue with God and connecting, that's tefillah. And I think that that's a very comprehensive definition of tefillah. Tefillah means to connect with God. But there is more to it than that. If tefillah means to bind and to connect, then the act of tefillah is not just about binding ourselves to God or connecting to God. It's also about healing and closing up all of the gaps within ourselves. When we do tefillah, or maybe this goes back to the reflexive conversation piece last time, we're not just connecting ourself with God, we're connecting the disparate parts of ourselves, all of the things that are broken, our pain, our suffering, our misery. Again, everybody struggles with something. And by talking with God, by engaging in tefillah, by pouring out our sorrows and troubles to the ultimate listening ear, by turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the words of Rabbi Eliezer Berkovitz, with what the world has done to us, we're able to somewhat heal that's a healing activity. We're able to somewhat heal our shattered souls. And that's psychologically proven, you know, just the concept of venting. That helps people feel better about what they're going through. It helps them feel more whole inside. And so therefore, tefillah is not just about connecting with God. It's about connecting with ourselves. It's about connecting with the various parts of ourselves that are not, you know, the pain that we're feeling, the suffering that we're feeling. And it's about mending that and healing that. By talking to God, we can sort of alleviate some of the burden of our own struggles. Just like talking to a therapist. It's very similar, I think. And this will turn us into vessels that are whole and ultimately capable of receiving the divine presence. In short, tefillah means to bind or to connect. Tefillah connects us to God. And it also connects and heals all the broken parts of ourselves. Thank you all for coming.